mainly talking to the people who are there now. Talked to all the presidents about their teams now, and while it hasn't been very systematic kind of exposure to the problems of the department, and we will be moving into more formal briefings soon, starting, as a matter of fact, tomorrow afternoon on Grumman and Litton. I thought it would be useful to seek an opportunity to get a little more fully your own sense of what my approach ought to be. We talked some at Camp David, but I had not, of course, at that time. I had much of any chance to think about it or to get current. I'm not better educated now, I think, to be a more receptive and more understanding recipient of any views you'd like to give me. Bob Altman thought it would be useful if I came with a sort of a topical list. Not by way of restricting the scope of this, and I got to have a very limited amount of time anyway. And these are quite broad subjects, obviously. But they meant merely to be suggestive or illustrative as reflecting the kinds of things that have come to the fore in my own conversation thinking. Stop.
one for the Marine Corps, all duplicating what each HUD does, and then of course the CIA on top of the whole heap. That's going to be very hard for you, because they're all jealous of that. And they take their dumbest big guy, and you put him in the, or the guy that they don't think can go to the top of command, and they give him the enrollment thing as one of the things up. But that's one thing we're going to do. The second thing is that there's going to have to be in defense a reappraisal of looking at the duplication thing of this whole business of one-third. You've heard me say this before. But we're not going to have four tactical Air Force Corps. We're not going to have a Marine Air Corps, an Army Air Corps, a Navy Air Corps, and an Air Corps. It doesn't mean we can have one. It doesn't mean that we're just not going to have four doing the same things and tactics and so forth. That's going to have to be very, very, very much re-examined. Now, perhaps the greatest waste in defense is in our feet. Here's an area where the subsidies, and this is going to be very hard on you, the subsidies of some of the educational institutions are shocking. Those subsidies are basically used by those educational institutions for the purpose of, rather than really contributing anything to defense, what they do is to simply build up the salary scales and so forth and so on. I'm going to cut the hell out of those. I'm trying to get this done before you get there, because I don't want you to have to take the heat from MIT, Caltech, Stanford, Cal, and so forth. But that's going to come down. The R&D is going to put a little sense into it. And it's also going to be done by people who believe in defense and not those who oppose defense, which the educational institutions oppose almost to a man. Get some of that out of the way before you get there. Now, in your case, one of the reasons that I think that you will particularly be effective in the Defense Department is that you'll be a very good politician this time when we're going to have to close bases and so forth. It's going to be hard, although we hope to get a little of that done before you get there. You've got a couple of weeks. And above all, you understand international affairs. That's the reason I felt very strongly that you could win. I want you to play, and Henry feels very strongly, we've talked about this, I want you to play a very important, I mean a very substantive role in the participation in the National Security Council, and also on a basis where Henry can talk to you, you know, about international affairs. Your daddy basically is an operator. He is not a strategist. I consider you to be a strategist, right, Henry?
Absolutely.
Right. Now, we come to the whole business of of how we work. We do have the system, the NSC system. It is one that the defense, that all of the cabinet resents. The state doesn't like it. The defense doesn't like it. Everybody else doesn't like it. But you've worked with it before, and you know how. You've got to determine whether on this Washington Special Action Group, for example, I don't see how a secretary can sit there with another deputy secretary. I don't think that can be done. On the other hand, I think you should take a very active interest in it. Right, Henry?
I expect to be meeting with Elliot.
You should have I think you should have a week
with Elliot.
You will. Did you do that?
Oh, yes. As if I used to when he was undersecretary.
Well, but I mean, now you can see. Look, every man is just the man for his time. He's the right man for his time. But you're the right man for this time. Because you will see the great strategic kind. You've got to take a look, for example, at such things as air defense. Now, one thing we certainly know is that all the need for fighter pilots and the rest of the pilots intercept planes coming over and so forth. that's going to be very, shall we say, looked into it. We all know what's, as far as the Soviet Union is concerned, it's going to be a missile kind. In other words, you take some, I'm saying, we're looking at here, it's a major project that we can offer sometime, and he's going to get into it so far. But I'd like for you to get into, to do a lot of thinking about the strategy. Think basically in very firm terms, very hard terms. We've got, I'm not here to dismantle the defenses of this country. But I think we can get a hell of a lot more defense out of what we're spending. I really do. I think this business of the three services fighting and scrambling with each other for how many bullets that they get, the positions, and who's going to have this mission and who's going to have that mission. I think the R&D program, of course, has been a disgrace. I think the overlap in, I mentioned, the three services. We have, in various areas, intelligence is the best example. But beyond that, I do feel that you can, that you should not, that the one danger you're going to have, I think, is going to be that people will think that you're there to raid the Defense Department. I don't want you to be the Louis Johnson.
No, that's
not. I want you to be there as a strong national defense man, but a national defense man who, frankly, takes what the poor dead horse all really have in mind, and finally begins to implement it. We have not had a Secretary of Defense who has been, frankly, the Secretary of Defense. We had a Secretary of Defense who was simply a broker, frankly, between the three services and the Marine Corps. I want you to be just a broker, you see. Now, not that they aren't all terrible, we've got to get along with them, all that.
Well,
but I feel it's very important for Clements, and I told Clements he should participate in this Washington Special Action Group. And as you know, Elliot, the White House is not in competition with the Department of Defense or the Department of Defense. Good God, there's no problem in working with the NSC. There really isn't. And you can also be sure that anything you want against me, it gets into me. It really does. I mean, I'm saying true to everyone that comes in here. Nothing is ever kept out of here. That doesn't mean that you don't come in to talk about it, because you and the Secretary of State, Secretary of Treasury, Attorney General, are about the four cabinet officers in addition to the Director of the Budget that I have seen from time to time. The others, I say on a somewhat regular basis. The others you see, like when you were at ATW, because you have a hell of a big department, you have to see when you've got major problems that come up. But as I see it, you go over there, you can either preside over the Defense Department, as it's always been presided over, and as Mel has done brilliantly, and, you know, get everybody to, you know, get along. Or you can, maybe we can develop some new strategic concepts. Maybe we can develop some new weapon systems. Maybe. But not with MIT doing the research, you sure as hell won't. And they are out of the program from now on. I'm cutting them completely out. You would just sit on a trade to $100 million. But that'll be done before you get there, so you'll get no heat from MIT.
Well, on this last point, I've been probing in this a little bit in my conversations. I've tried not to leave the show before you choose. I'm afraid that I probably wouldn't learn as much if I were to hang out.
Oh.
But I have tried to assess the extent to which a new national consensus with respect to the force levels and the weapons capabilities required for the long term in peacetime, given the strategic global balance between the U.S., USSR, China, and so on.
Right.
I don't feel that, you both know a lot more about this.
I agree with you.
But I have They see what you're doing in the area of confrontation, I mean of negotiation, rather. But what they, there seems to be another step, which is given a generation of peace, given a progressive process.
How do we keep it?
How do we keep it? What does peace require?
Suppose we get the damn war in Vietnam over and we get peace. Everybody say peace isn't wonderful. Getting peace isn't as difficult. The main thing is to keep it. Getting it is difficult, but keeping it is more difficult. Another thing, I don't know, but I think Henry, don't you agree that Elliot should not get bogged down in the details of all the in Clement, you've got the kind of a guy who thinks an LA, being in Texas and so forth. Some said, well, maybe he ought to be Secretary of Defense. And I had, I said, I don't believe on would come in as Deputy Secretary. He says, I don't want to be Secretary of Defense. He says, I will not follow that. I'm basically a manager. I'm a weapons type. I want to be out, you know what I mean? I think he's the perfect guy, do that sort of thing. But where we have lacked, we have had a tactician as Secretary of Defense, frankly, for the last 4 years. And you're a strategist, right, Henry? That's why we want you there. But I want you to tilt very strongly in terms of how we have this generation of peace and so forth. It's going to be one bitch to keep, because before you begin, you've got to take a briefing on, if you will, what the Russians are doing, and it's a frightening thing. We're going into these next salt wars. We're going to go into the next salt talks. I don't know what's going to happen, I think if you could do some strategic thinking, just go off for a while, do this. Think about it. Sit down with Henry. When after we get the Vietnam, Henry steps in.
I have guys at the second level to work with. These people.
You and Elliot work together.
Elliot and I work together, and then we'll designate people. As you pointed out, the difficulty is we have in the NSC system, in the DPRC.
I should mention the DPRC. You know about that.
To deal with these issues, but we need the enthusiastic support of the defense department, which we have not had.
If I just asked you for that support, let me tell you, it isn't the Ren Run Review. It isn't intended to be that. You're completely, but at least, you see, then all you have, rather than having this perennial fight between them, Ash, the new director of Ash, is he in that?
Yeah, you don't have
to. Ash is in it. All the rest. It allows us to get these tough, knotty problems in one place.
Of course, Elliot and I can do it as we did when he was in the State Department. If he and I meet regularly, we can.
You can make a signal out and frankly, program the group.
Exactly.
Listen, nothing can be run by a group. This is a question of a man. Well, much as the other guy has got, particularly when the other guy is out to expand and we're out to defend. That is my philosophy. I feel it very strongly. And therefore, I want you in. You've got to fight in your case. You will have to tilt a little more to fighting for a bigger budget than a smaller budget.
So that's an objective point.
You know, I don't want you to get in the position where they say, here comes this peacenik Elliot Bridges, this State Department spot. He's going to ruin the Defense Department. He must not let this happen.
Well,
so you've got to be, you have to show against the Secretary of State. Let's face it. Not the Rogers or his successor. He will have a succession, of course. Will be basically a soft any more than you are. But basically, the State Department attitude is soft, cave, give him everything, please everybody, and so forth and so on. The defense, believe me, you've got to be out there fighting for for a strong national defense, but also fighting for a different one. And let me just say one other thing on the volunteer armed force. I don't know whether it'll work or not. Larry doesn't think it will at all. I think it might. Unless we get unemployment down too low, then maybe it won't. But my point is, we've got to give it every chance to work. We've got to get every chance to work. And as I say, one of the main things in the Secretary of Defense's job, I think, is to, and this will, you can do this better once the war is over, is to make people proud of the people who wear the uniform again. Make them proud of them. You've got to go out there and speak with pride of what fine men they are. These men devote their lives. And being in the services of peacetime is the most boring. It's like in a wartime, as you know, being in a rear area. You damn near die. Yeah. So you want to go up front. Why? Not because you're brave, but because you're bored. I didn't say that. Well, now I'm going to go up front. So I got up there. You got the load of hell, drop the bombs. And why the hell did I go? Why did I stay in the field? See? But think of peacetime fellows. Think of those poor guys sitting over at the A's orders and the rest. They're bored to death. Or so on.
Where's the
Bay Army side?
The pilots have their planes to fly and their
looking for the his opposite numbers and lower, and the Army, in the Navy, the Air Force, etc., who can be jumped and go up to the top commands. We got to put young,
special
people
in the Air Force.
Air Force is unbelievable. It is unbelievable. And it isn't going to be done the old way. Ryan's a sweet guy, and the poor guy lost his son in Vietnam and everything, and every time I see him, I almost cry. But he can't run without the damn Air Force.
We never get it.
But I say one other thing out of disrespect. We do take one hard look at the service academies. I notice they grow like Topsy. They're building new buildings every place. I don't care about the new buildings. I'm not talking about the cost. But if you graduate 4,500 new Army officers, Navy officers, and Air Force officers every year, you've got to fill us for them. In other words, I think those service academies, as we look to the future, have got to get back to a realistic level, which might be 2,500 or something. I just think you're going to have to. Unless all you want to do is just have officers in service. But I think but that's part of the problem. The pressure is to find billets for 4,200 guys who graduate, and they don't afford to graduate, maybe 1,000 graduate. It's just unbelievable, the number they have. And they're all growing. Every service academy is bigger. Take a hard look at that, will you?
Can I go back to one point, briefly on the budget and spending and my overall. I will have for a while an advantage in coming from the biggest domestic spending agency and in dealing with people on the Hill who regret dollars for defense. After about August or so, they'll conclude I've been taken into camp by the generals, I suppose. But in the meanwhile, we face, I think, a very tough problem with the loss of four Republicans, three of them on appropriations. And we've got on the Senate Armed Services Committee, in the Republican side, four senators who really cannot help us on the floor. We start with Thurman, Tower, Dominic, and Goldwater. Now, the guy who is least valuable in that Senate is the guy who is the most gung-ho at the department. Thurman cannot get us one vote.
No.
Then you go from those four to Schweiker and Sexton. We probably will not get another. Margaret Chase Smith, whatever her flaws and assets, at least had the reputation of making up her mind independently. So when she got up, she could swing 5, 6, 7, 8 votes. Now,
I would say that group is only one that I would not underestimate because he's a clever politician. He's miserable to get along with. He's cocky and all the rest. But Tower will program.
Yeah.
He'll program. So spend a little time in it. Thurman can't get you any votes. Goldwater can't get you any votes. Dominic can't. Dominic's tired. He's a sweet guy, but he doesn't have any zing. But Tower is a tough little bastard with ambition. And I think he can get votes. He's a deal cutter.
He can also help you tell you how to do it.
Yeah, he's a deal cutter.
Even where he can't do
he's
it.
He's a deal cutter. He's the only one you got in that, you see.
That's right.
But you have a problem, as you know, seeing one without the other. Oh, well, you've worked out.
Well, the thing is,
I would give him some tender love and care for Tar. He will be a hell of an asset to you.
The thing I was coming to is that we are, I think, the Defense Department and all the services are in the same boat on a sink or swim basis.
Yeah.
What seems to me, and this is part of what I see as an interrelation between the articulation of policy and strategy and the force structures required. In a sense, I'm trying to say too many things once perhaps, but in a sense, the very difficulty of the impending situation is also an opportunity because it seems to me there may be a chance, unprecedented really, since Forrestal, to create an awareness on the part of the military that they've got to get their heads together. They've got to perceive individual contributions to a total effort and subordinate individual interests on the recognition that unless they do, the whole thing is going to get
the problem is that
could buy the MIDIs, well, there'd be little problems. But we have been, Henry and I have always talked to this, we've just been waiting for the day when we could finally get at this goddamn Defense Department.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
The Defense Department, they've never had a better friend in this place for a long time. I stood up for them, and good God defended them on everything. In Cambodia on November 3rd, and all that. But on the other hand, I'm a strong defense man, but goddamn, I'm not for any competent defense. And we are not going to have a competent defense.
Well,
could I ask you to do one thing? It'll take you, you're a fast reader. You're probably like all those Harvard people read 1,000 words a minute. I read 50 words a minute. My point is, I want you to go, there's one thing in Churchill's that we're reading. Read, not the last volume, but read Churchill's account of World War I. It's 5 volumes. Read particularly, just start about the time, see he was a procurement president, but start about the time of when the battles really began. And also read his account of the Eastern Front, which is the most fascinating. The only reason I'm telling you, they're going to learn a damn thing of it. It's fascinating history to begin with. It's the best history he probably ever wrote, because he wrote it when he was out of office and he did it himself. And the stuff that was done later, a lot of it was ghosted in World War II stuff, just sort of a collection of, you know, papers and dispatches all over. Some nice writing in that too. Now, the point that I make is this: there's no Churchill really sees the military mind, its weaknesses and its strengths. As a matter of fact, I don't mean to equate myself with him, but I see it exactly as he sees it. I mean, I'm for him, I'm for the uniform, I have the greatest respect for him, but God damn it, the military people never have conceptual strategic concepts. We have had two. Let's see. Eisenhower was a great politician. He was not a great military leader. He was a hell of a politician. Now, that's how he was able to pull everything together. When I say not a great military leader, he was not a field commander, my friend. The best field commander and the one whose concepts was Patton. That's why Patton came. That's why everybody's jealous of him and hated him. And the other was MacArthur. That's why everybody hated MacArthur. We all hated him. I was in the Navy, so we always talked about, you know, the MacArthur seats in the airplanes and all that sort of thing. You recall all the rest of it sitting on the floors of those damn DC-3s or DC-4s. There'd be a seat where they say, you know, it wasn't much. They'd have a MacArthur. But anyway, what I'm getting at is, generally, the military people, for some reason, Haig is an exception, although he has some of the same problems. But somewhere that the military guy thinks in terms of the last war rather than the next. De Gaulle was an exception. Now, let me come to 2 points. In World War I, for example, Gallipoli, which failed, was the right concept. It would have shortened the war. It would have won the war. Had the goddamn British Navy had not feared to lose a battleship or two or something that had gone in there and they could have knocked the thing off. But where did it come from? Did it come from the military? No. It came from the other side. Now, the other point is that it came from Churchill. But the even more important, the tank. Now, everybody will argue about who got the tank and so on. The concept of using tanks in mass without advanced artillery for preparation as the battle camp or this, of course, became the standard thing in World War II. It was Churchill who got that developed, and it wasn't done until 1916. If they had started sooner, the whole damn war could have changed. The French used them once like that, and the British used them once. I just recall it out of my mind, things that I read long, long ago. The reason I want you to read this is that it will give you a feeling of the defense mind, and you know what it is. And also of the civilian mind and how you ought to approach it. Don't you agree, Henry?
Yes, I thought the meeting we had before Elliot came, when you put a lot on the line in this 12-page bombing, and Moore tells you they had only 8 hours when they could use our tactical airplanes. Well, that means we've got 8 long tactical airplanes.
That's right.
12 days.
In 12 days, we have $3 in gratuitous. And at the present time, in terms of so-called small wars, and God hope we never have one, but in order to avoid one, we better be prepared for it. Elliot, good God, do you think a jet is the right thing to get a truck with?
Yeah.
Or, on the other hand, do you think we ought to have helicopters out there being used for... Jesus Christ, the helicopter's a vulnerable thing. They shoot the goddamn ass off. And it's because, do you know who has the biggest tactical... You've heard. I mean, Clements told me this. She's like, the biggest tactical air force at the present time in the United States Defense Department is not an air force. It's the goddamn army. The Army Air Corps is back. It is. It is bigger than... There's a bigger budget for tactical air in the Army than there is in the Air Force right today. Now, there is something damn wrong. What's the Air Corps doing? All right, I'll tell you what they're doing. First, they got a lot of damn good fighter pilots that are ready to take care of the Russians. The Russians come over with those bear bombers. They ain't going to come over that way. Never. Not when you get here in 15 minutes with something else. Second fighters. What else are they doing? They're going to fly B-52s over there. Well, the B-52s are going to get their tail shot off. Anyway, if you have, once that kind of decision is made, it's still going to be done through the missiles. We know that, Henry. And yet, the Air Force just will not think conceptually. How many times, Henry, have I told these people to start thinking this way?
Oh, I've been at every meeting you've had with the chiefs, and it's been glorious.
Well, I'm going to handle it. And what I want to do is this. I'm going to see more from time to time alone. I have that right. You will be informed. He will not be told anything you won't be known about. But I don't want you to feel that there's any problems. The reason I want to see him is if I'm a working owner, I have got to work, though. I've got to work over Moore and his successor. And what I want you to do is to have the very closest communication with Henry and naturally with me so that we can get a tandem on this thing. You know, I had a thing, Henry, at a very early time. I just don't know whether we ought to put this in the NSC, in a full NSC meeting. Then you'll have Andrew Yakimov. He doesn't know about it.
We should have a small executive committee.
What do you think? I wonder if before we do that, if maybe we shouldn't do it this way. Maybe you and tell me, maybe Clements and I said, I don't know.
I just don't know.
You and Elliot will meet first.
Why don't we meet at...
You see, the problem with an NSC meeting is that we'll get in. Now, it should be at the NSC level eventually, because Rogers,
Rogers,
Secretary of State.
But you do need, I think, quite a lot of quite informal discussion. And some of which, I don't want to...
You see, if you have a problem with the time, let me say this, the difficulty with the briefing, with an NSC, with a regular briefing, unless we have programmed it in advance, is that Moore will go in there and put up all those damn charts and then prepare them for weeks. And you put up a lot of charts. Rogers from State will say, well, you got to do this, you got to do the other thing. And if it turns out to be, you go on doing the same goddamn thing, just changing. You dot the T's rather than the I's.
Right.
Now, that's what we've done over and over again. I don't
fairly informal process in which you could engage directly.
I agree.
In which
I
we're
not, time for that.
In which we're not, in effect, simply submitting.
The campaign is over with, all the conflicts over with, all we have to do, if we get the war over with, at some time in the next 2 or 3 years, and I'll have maybe a year to do some informal talking.
If my sense of the situation is right, then it will be important that you publicly address some of these things at some point in ways that really come across. There's a lot of, and that's got to come out of your own.
Well, I'd like to have you prepare, if you would. I'd like for you to prepare, after you've had a chance to think about it, a recommendation as to what ought to be said publicly on some of these things, if you would.
Well,
I'd like to speak on national defense a few times. It ought to be done. I agree with
that. But we've got.
Rather than just going through the usual thing that I love people in uniform, which I've made over and over again.
Yeah, your public utterances in this, they haven't had to go beyond where they have gone, but they will have to in my
yes,
view, in the foreseeable future.
The moment Vietnam is over, we will then have to move.
Yeah.
So we'll be prepared. I think you're going to, let me say, I think you've got a terrific challenge.
Let's the three of us decide it.